This is FBG Jen
and FBG Kristen.
And I'm FBG Margot, host and producer. You're listening to the podcast that will help you keep a lid on the junk in the trunk and inspire you to live a happy and confident life.
Each episode, we chat with motivational experts and celebs and share our own candid adventures in being healthy.
If you're looking for a podcast that's equal parts hilarious and enlightening, well then welcome to the Fit Bottoms Girls podcast.
Welcome back to the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. Our special guest today is Meredith Atwood from Swim Bike Mom. That's the blog that she writes for. Meredith is a four-time Ironman triathlete, and our very own Kristen is also a triathlon person. She's done many. So this is Margot on the line today. We have Jen.
Hello.
And we have Kristen.
The resident triathlete.
Hello. Yes. And this is our
expert.
She's our expert. So this is our own little mini version of the Reddit AMA. We're going to ask Kristen questions about triathlons because neither Jen nor I have ever participated in one, and we have a ton of questions. So Kristen, are you ready?
Bring it.
Okay. Jen, you go first.
Okay. Well, also, Kristen, you're a coach.
I am a coach. I am a USAT level one certified coach, baby.
Woo! Woo! So she's experienced and she's certified. Okay. So I was hoping that you could just break down the distances for all the triathlons, like the most common ones, because obviously it is very different if you're going to do like Olympic distance versus Ironman, but I don't know if everyone knows that.
Right. Okay, so first off, let me just say that the thing that's really cool about triathlon is that no matter what distance you do, once you've done it and you cross that finish line, you get to say you're a triathlete, and you get to say that forever. And that was something that kept me going in my first race, because I was like, damn it, I'm going to finish because I want to be a triathlete. So the most common distances are sprint, which that is – the swim is, I think it's technically supposed to be like half a mile, but many of them are much shorter. Half a mile is about 750 meters. I have done a lot of them with like 300 meter swims or 400 meter swims, which is, if you're a swimmer, it's barely worth getting wet for, but sometimes that's all you can do. The bike is anywhere from 10 to 15 miles. I think that the official distance is supposed to be 20 kilometers, so roughly 12 and a half miles. And the run is typically a 5K. There are going to be variations on those, obviously, since I just mentioned a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. But that is like sprint distance. That's essentially what you're looking at. So if you think about it, each of those distances for someone who's already reasonably fit, each of those distances is totally doable. There's also a super sprint that you'll find sometimes that is like half of all of that. So really, you know, that's, I can't even tell you how doable that is. Like if you're interested and you see one and you think, hey, maybe I should, then you should do it. The next one up is the Olympic, also known as a 5150. Your swim is roughly, it's almost a mile. It's 1500 meters. Your bike is almost 25 miles, which is 40 kilometers. And the run is a 10K. And then you have essentially, I think after that, really the two that people know about are your half iron, which is a 70.3. You're looking at a 1.2 mile swim. So it's not really much of a longer swim than the Olympic. The bike, however, is 56 miles.
Oof.
And then the run is a half marathon.
Oh my God.
So that's
legit.
Whoa.
It's legit. That's the longest that I have done. And that's the longest that I will do. I'll say, like, I don't have interest in doing a full, but a full iron is it's double a half. So as you might guess by the full and half, 2.4 miles for the swim, 112 miles on that bike, and 26.2 miles to finish out your day.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's
when Tish and I, when Tish and I ran the marathon, the Disney marathon in 2010, that was like this thing that like we kept going over in our heads. It was just like, people would do this at the end of the race. Like we can barely do this running portion, but people would have already been, it's mind blowing to me.
It is, but let me also say to that end, it is different. Like, and it's, I'm a couple years out from having done the 70.3 distance, so it's even feeling a little foggy to me. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, Kristen? That's hard. And it was. But it's not as much harder to throw that onto the end of a triathlon as you would think it is. partly because you're trained and you're ready for it, but also like you are using some different muscles. Your mind is in a different place. The support is generally set up a little bit differently. So it's different. I just want to make it clear. Like I think a half marathon is really freaking hard. Like no joke. I think they're very difficult. My half marathon time in the half iron was faster than some half marathons that I've just straight up run.
And yeah.
Having trained for those and like been prepared. So it's doable and it's more doable than you think it is.
So what's your favorite part of it when is it the swimming or the biking or the running, or do you like them all equally, or what do you think?
Well, I'm a decent swimmer. So I really do enjoy that because that's the one part of the race where I feel like I'm a little bit in it to win it. Mm-hmm. I know that and it always depends on the competition, right? But I'm always aiming to be in the front of the pack on the swim. So that is really kind of fun in and of itself. And then the bike, it's funny. That's probably where I have the most improvement to make. And I do enjoy it, but always by the end of the bike, I'm looking at the runners with like this longing in my face because I'm like, oh my God, my it's her. I just want to get off of this thing. I'm so jealous. And then generally about 2 miles into the run, I see cyclists still on the course. I'm like, oh my God, please let me get on a bike. Just give me a ride. but the thing that's cool about the bike and the run, especially with some of the longer distances, is, I mean, I'm sure that if you are racing hard and going really fast, you don't do this. But if you are more of a middle to back of the packer, which is generally where I fall, I have more enthusiasm than speed, you end up having some conversations with people, or at the very least, you end up kind of cheering for people as you're passing each other. And I really love that. Like, it's a really nice community feel.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you also, both of you, because I know Margot teaches cycling and stuff, the clipping in situation with the feet?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that is scary.
It is scary. Kristen, tell me what you think of it.
Well, you guys, it took me a long time to get into, and it, funny enough, you call them, it's clipless when you're clipping in is what
there
it's
you go.
Called. Yeah. So just to make it as confusing as possible.
Right. Exactly.
It took me years. Like I think I had done at least one Olympic distance, maybe two, before I got myself a pair of proper cycling shoes and clipless pedals because I was so nervous and I was more interested in being comfortable and enjoying my time spent on a bike versus taking a couple minutes off. But yeah, it made a really big difference in not only my speed, but also just when you're clipped into your pedals, you have the ability to not just push on your pedals, but also pull.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So if you're doing any hills at all, it's night and day. But yeah, I still, if I haven't been on my bike for a little while and I go to clip in, like I get pretty nervous. It's not the most comfortable, natural thing for me. What about you, Margo?
I get terrified. You know, I will be honest with you. It took me, I've been cycling for years. It was like 2 or 3 years in that I finally would like clip in for a century ride and I was terrified to do it. But you're right. I mean, it's especially the pulling up. It's the activation of the glutes and the hamstrings. You know, it's that full, 180 degree pedal stroke that it makes all the difference when you're clipped in. Your toes aren't pointing to the street, which is putting stress on your knees. It's everything. It's just like me, I have my fear pictures, as I call it, because I'm an extremely clumsy person. And I've also, I don't know if you've ever witnessed this. Have you ever witnessed a bike accident where somebody like hit a pebble on the road, and they got thrown from their bike? It's a little scary and intimidating. That's why you always wear your helmet, by the way. I still see people who don't want to wear them. That's dumb. Yeah, I absolutely, but I have to kind of talk myself into it. I do have to kind of, but it makes it faster, especially on hills. You're absolutely right. But I don't do it when I'm riding around the city. If I'm just running around Brooklyn, going out to Far Rockaway or whatever, I'm with my sneakers and just the regular pedals. Cause you just can't predict what's going to happen.
I did try it in an indoor class and I really could feel the difference. Like it was amazing how.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Indoor, it's night and day. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was kind of a good introduction. Yeah. But there's something to be like, I need my feet if I need to fall down, if I need to jump off. Like you were saying. Like,
However, the thing that really talked me into doing this was, I had seen a couple of people who had been in some bike accidents and I learned you're actually safer being clipped in other than Okay, so you are more likely to just fall over, like, when you're at a stop sign, mm-hmm. which isn't great, and you will do it. I did it. I swore I wouldn't because I was too cautious, but no, I totally did. So you're more likely to fall over, like, just at a stop sign because you take the wrong foot out of the pedal or whatever. But if you are in an actual bike accident,
yeah,
your shoes are going to come unclipped more easily than your foot would come out of, like, a cage.
Mm-hmm.
So gotcha. In that way, it is actually a safer choice. And that was sort of the thing that pushed me into it when I started doing some longer distances was, okay, let's talk about risk factor and what's going to be safest for me. And, you know, bottom line, I don't want to break bones. So.
Yeah. That's great information. Yeah. No, I mean, that's maybe like, okay, no, this is a safer thing to do. Like, yep.
Yeah, it is.
And if you are taking classes indoors, because like I said, you were saying before, I do teach this, and I tell this to my students, if you take two or three classes a week pretty consistently, invest the money in the spin shoes. Once again, yeah. it's much more glute activation and hamstring activation. It's just a better ride. You're putting less stress on your joints. And honestly, you get a pair, you will never have to buy another pair. Like, they will last you forever. So yeah. I recommend that. So, Kristen, so what was your favorite race you've done so far?
Oh, that's such a hard question. I really, despite the fact that I have not signed up for another one, I really loved doing the Augusta 70.3 because it's an interesting course. There's good crowd support and I had a good race. Like, I felt really good about it. But I also, last year I did here in Sarasota, I did the Siesta Key Triathlon, which was just like, on my local beach right here. It's a beach run, which is awful. That's really hard. But it was also cool because I'm like, oh, like, this is my beach. Like, literally, this is where I go for happy hour. And, you know, this is where I go in the morning with my coffee. And so it was, like, the most home court advantage you could imagine. And then as I was on my bike, and I had some friends who came out to cheer me on. And then, like, on my bike, I'm going out. I saw some friends who were out on a long training run. So we, like, cheered for each other as I'm on my bike, and they're just training. And then they came back. And then afterwards, we floated in the water and drank mimosas. So I don't know. That was – I mean, that was pretty awesome. That's hard to beat. And that was a sprint. So, you know, you bust your ass for an hour and change, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Well, hour and a lot of change in my case.
So how long does it take to train for when, like the half marathon Ironman that you did? Like, how long did you, how many, you know, was it months? Is it weeks?
Gosh, that's a great question. Yeah. I think that I put probably 10, like, really solid specific weeks of training in, maybe 12. And the first long course I did, let's see, that was actually, so I did Ledman 3 years ago, I think, or 4 years ago. And that was like this time of year as we're talking, which is mid-April. And I know that I started training for that mid-January. So I would say probably right about 3 months, starting with a reasonable base. Like, I wasn't starting from, it wasn't like couch.
Yeah.
Half iron, you know, which you could probably do. You just want to give yourself a lot of time and be really, really gentle with yourself when you can.
But I would think you would need a coach. You know, you would need that in-person, you know, support. Am I right?
Well, I find it really helpful, even because, like, I have the knowledge. I know what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But having someone looking at what you're doing from outside and helping provide you with the context of why you're doing these workouts and actually sort of making you do the ones that you don't want to do. Because if it's me, like, swimming, I'm just going to do sprinty work all the time. You know, I have my things that I like, and I know that they're beneficial, but having, and I have my coach, Patrick Billingsley, has been by my side for, like, every new thing that I've taken on, and he's gotten me there feeling good and healthy. And that's the other thing, is having someone else who can make sure that you're doing things that are going to keep you healthy and uninjured. Like, in my coaching training, that, like, you know, your number one goal is you get your athlete to the start line without injury.
Yeah.
Like, that is your job, and it's really important, and it can be hard to, when it's just you, to identify signs of overtraining or, you know, identify signs of yourself burning out when you're so focused on a goal. Having somebody outside helping you, it is really great.
Yeah. You have someone to, like, check in with and be accountable to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it gets really emotional. I mean, you've done like long distance things and really hard things, and it gets very emotional. And having someone who, you know, who you can talk to, who understands that, you know, sometimes a bad run isn't just about your legs being tired. You know, it's really beneficial. So I do recommend it. And I also think it's important to note that it doesn't have to be someone necessarily local or in person. I think that for almost every race, that every major race I've done, my coach has lived, if not in another state, at least another city. Hmm. And that we'll do some video once in a while to kind of make sure that, especially with, I've got the bad knees and stuff. So it's really nice to have someone check my form once in a while. And I do go to like local group things so that I am working out with other people. But yeah, I mean, it's done virtually and on the phone. So yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really cool.
What is a sign of overtraining, by the way?
Ooh.
So many.
I know.
So one of my favorites to watch for is if you are checking your heart rate in the morning, you know, you should know what your average resting heart rate is first thing in the morning before you get up, before you brush your teeth. And if you start seeing that change, then that's a sign. And I believe, oh gosh, if it's lower, right? That's one of my favorite things to look for, because that, and for me, I actually had an issue that started getting lower, and I started having real trouble keeping my feet warm, which it's really weird, but it was like at night I would have like two pairs of socks on
in Florida.
I'm wearing long socks and fuzzy slippers right now, and it's probably 80 degrees out, so but I mean, it was just, they were freezing all the time. And so we dialed things back just a little bit. I allowed myself some recovery, and then things got back to normal. So.
Mm. If your heart rate's higher in the morning, it's usually
higher in the morning.
I didn't want to interrupt, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So higher in the morning and then the tired feet. Is that circulation? That's the problem, or?
I believe so.
Yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah.
I didn't heard the feet one, but yeah. I mean, you can kind of tell when you have those like lead legs, you know?
Oh, the lead legs are the worst.
Yeah. Or you can't get your heart rate. Cause I mean, normally if you're doing especially like interval work, you should be able to like recover, you know, and if you're pretty fit, you should be able to recover fairly quickly. I can tell that if I'm not feeling well, or if I have just done too much, it just takes me so long to recover once I get my heart rate up high. And for me, that's always a sign that it's just like, oh, too much, you know?
And it can be really hard to get your heart rate up to those levels in the first place.
Yeah.
That's one of the other things is, you know, if you're doing like hard interval work and you know that you're pushing your body as much as you can and you're still hanging out in like zone 2, zone 3, then it might be time to have a chat.
Yeah. Cause your muscles like don't have the strength to push yourself hard enough to get there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Plus, I mean, being cranky and sleepy, and you know, there are lots of signs.
Well, this was fascinating. I love this section right here. I mean, Kristen, you have so much great knowledge to impart upon our listeners. Thank you so much for letting Jen and I interview you right now.
Oh, well,
I know. Tell us all about triathlon.
Yeah. Well, and just wait, Meredith had some really cool tips. I learned things. She's amazing. So I'm really excited for anyone who's still hanging in after all this triathlon talk. Like if you're digging this, you are really going to love part two of this one.
So let's just slide right into that interview right now. Here we go, guys. Meredith Atwood, swim bike mom. In 2010, Meredith Atwood was a mother to two children under the age of two with the baby weight and then some to show for it, as well as a legal career that required long hours and even longer commute. Like most people, Meredith had, over the years of trying to advance a career while parenting, lost sense of herself. She knew she needed a change, but she didn't know where to begin. Through the sport of triathlon, swim, bike, and run, she managed to find something that was hers and hers alone. Flash forward to the present day. Meredith is now a 4-time Ironman triathlete, curator of Swim Bike Mom, a website and motivational aid station that garners more than 30,000 unique visitors per month. She's the author of Triathlon for Every Woman, a certified triathlon coach, and co-founder of TriFi, a triathlon clothing line for women of all sizes. She is also the co-founder of Swim Bike Fuel, a revolutionary nutrition program for female athletes. Meredith is not the atypical thin triathlete, but she's an average-sized woman who does big athletic things. And her journey is far from complete. She knows she's a work in progress. Welcome to the show, Meredith Atwood.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. So this is Margo, and on the line today we have Kristen.
Hello.
Hello.
So Meredith, I'm going to ask the first question. So in 2010, you described yourself as overweight, addicted to alcohol, out of shape, and unhappy. So fast forward 7 years later, and you're a USA Triathlon Level 1 coach, a spin instructor, my goodness, and a regular contributor to Triathlete magazine. So what was that first step towards your newer, healthier existence?
Wow, that sounds really bad when you say
I'm sorry.
So this is where you were. No, it's so funny when I hear someone else say it. I mean, especially when I was living the life, I should remember what it's like, but it's always funny to hear kind of the 180. But, you know, I always joke about my journey to fitness started with cookies. I was actively searching cookies at a lunch and learn event at my office. We had these little lunch and learn events, and they always had the best box sandwiches and cookies. And I was about, I don't know, 230, 240 pounds. And so I was always really excited about eating all the foods. And so my office had this lunch and learn event, and I could see the cookies and smell the cookies because my office was next to the conference room. And so I ended up wandering into this lunch and learn event, and unbeknownst to me at the time, it was the local gym. It was a gym membership type lunch and learn. And I was like, oh man, how did I end up in this one? But I ended up, you know, stuffing my face and getting a new gym bag and joining this gym. And I just didn't know that I didn't know how I would fit in all the time. I didn't have any time to do that. I had two kids and I was working all the time. And how in the world would I make time to work out? But I knew that at that point in my life, I was so tired of being where I was. I knew something had to change. And so I joined this gym, and it started with this, I like to call it my magical spinning class, because I wandered into the spinning class that was full of triathletes and fit people, and the class was amazing, and the instructor was, you know, very awesome and inspiring, and it started there. That was the beginning of the journey, and it didn't all happen at once. It slowly built on itself. I mean, I didn't do a triathlon until almost a year later, but that was definitely the beginning, and it all started with my desire to eat.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think a lot of us can probably relate to that. Now, so Meredith, I'm also a triathlete with, I like to say, with more enthusiasm than skill.
Too.
But yeah. And I got certified last spring, actually, to be a level one coach. Huh. So as I was reading through your story, I was noting a lot of similarities. And I have to tell you that St. Anthony's was my first Olympic distance race, which from what I read, it was yours as well.
Yes.
And yeah, and it's for those of you out there who are not familiar with it, it's a huge triathlon. They used to be only Olympic distance. They now have a sprint distance, or at least they did last year. I don't know if that's continuing.
Yes, they still do.
Okay, cool. And that's in St. Pete, Florida. So not so far from where I am. Anyway, so that race holds a bit of a special place in my heart. And I felt like other than a few of the like technical turns on the bike course and that cobblestone at the end, it was pretty, oh my gosh, I said some naughty words on that. but I thought it was pretty darn newbie friendly.
Yeah.
And I wonder, with all of your experience, both for yourself and the people who you're working with, are there any specific races or locations that you suggest for triathletes who are new to the sport or are trying a new distance for the first time?
That's funny you should mention that. St. Anthony's is always on my list. And I forgot about the cobblestones, though.
Oh.
Actually, they invited me to come back. And I was like, I don't want to add another race this year. But then I thought, oh, my gosh, how great to go back to the scene of the crime, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm going to actually race it next month. But it's a great... great beginner race. Let's see some others. We actually have a race here in Georgia, Atlanta area, the Georgia Peach Women's Triathlon, and it's a sprint distance. It's so beginner friendly. It's put on by a local race organization, Georgia Multisports, and just, I've done it every year. I've been able, I think this will be my sixth year coming up, and I try not to miss it because at any start line, the race director, Jim Rainey, will ask how many women this is your first try, and it's like 80%. So
oh my gosh.
A beginner friendly race. And You see mountain bikes, you see cruisers, you see almost streamers and banana seats. You know, it's just like any kind of, bike out there. But I love that one. And honestly, if you're within a 6-hour drive but want to tackle a triathlon, I think it's worth it to make the trip for that. So that's the Georgia Peach Women's Tri. I love. As far as bigger distances, I guess Ironman 70.3 Augusta is a really good one.
That was my first one. My first and so far only 70.3. But yeah, super, super beginner friendly, I would say.
I think so. Yeah. Especially if the swim is your nemesis. You got the river helping you a little bit there.
You could roll over on your back and float down the river and still beat the time cutoff. No joke.
Well, you made the potato chip bag on YouTube, right? Like there's a video on YouTube of a Dorito bag or something going down the Augusta or the Savannah River. And it makes it down in like 47 minutes.
Yeah.
just the bag. Yes. So you can just see a bag and still do fun. I hate to like limit it to the East Coast, but that's kind of really where I raced. But I think those are two really great. And then for Ironman, I don't think a beginner level entry for any Ironman is good. But I think those are a couple good ones. And I would second your St. Anthony's for sure.
So you've competed in 4 full Ironman triathlons, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so what is it like to train for those things? That sounds crazy to me. And what is your favorite part of that competition? Is the run, the bike, the swim? What's your favorite part?
The finish.
Gotcha.
The finish is my favorite. It is crazy to train for Ironman. It is so easy to have your eyes set on, I want to be an Ironman, I want to do this, and to underestimate what it's going to take. And, you know, there's training, but there's other things like bike maintenance, and you have to get your body taken care of. I mean, you're bound to need a massage every once in a while or, you know, a doctor's appointment because it's hard to get through those without some sort of issue with your body. And then the time that it takes to do your laundry and family at the same time is totally crazy, but it's doable. I think it's really tough to do a first Ironman. I would say the subsequent ones are easier because you have a more realistic idea of what's coming and where you can kind of push and pull and give and take a little. With the first one, I think it's so fear-based. You're like, oh my gosh, what do I have going on here? And you don't want to miss any workouts. And so there can be a lot of family strife almost going into a first Ironman because it's such a long distance and you're so scared. And, you know, come the second or the third one, I realize that missing a workout here and there is not fatal, that I do need to sometimes take a rest day or, you know, hang with my kids and not get out of bed and not get out of the PJs and stuff. So, but it is intense. It's definitely, you know, you got to get the 100-mile rides on your bike. You've got to do the long runs and you're in the pool until you're a prune. It's just part of it. And I guess that's the allure. I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's not for everybody. That's for darn sure.
Okay, and it doesn't have to be too. I mean, one thing I like to always say is who cares if you don't do an Ironman? I mean, you are still a triathlete if you do sprints, and there's no such thing as just a sprint or just a half Ironman. Choose your distance and be the athlete you want to be. I think a lot of people, and I blame myself partially for this move, have jumped into triathlon and then they run straight to Ironman like I did. Do as I say, not as I do. But, you know, really take the time to enjoy any distance. And because it's all hard, no matter, it's just a different engine working for you, you know, so.
Totally. One of my coaches always said that she actually preferred the longer distances to a sprint because she would push so hard the entire time during a sprint that she would finish and she would just be wrecked. And she's like, I can do an Ironman and, you know, I mean, it's not like it's easy and necessarily pleasant, but she's like, my body doesn't hurt quite the same way as it does after pushing for a sprint.
It's so true. A sprint can hurt.
Yep. Yeah. But that said, I mean, I hope we're not scaring people away.
No.
It's super fun.
Oh, no.
It's awesome.
No. You can do it at your pace. But I think what Kristen's trying to say is like the further down the road you get and you actually go out to race a sprint. Like if you go and try and race and improve, you're kind of redlining. Just like if you go out and run a 5K, you're trying to improve your time. You go do these sprints and you want to get better. And then you're sprinting in the pool or sprinting in the lake or whatever and sprinting on your bike. And so it's like one big long 5K.
Now, in terms of the training, like we kind of just discuss the fact that, you know, you're talking about significant hours per week that you're putting in. And can you talk a little bit about some of the, in your experience, the specific logistics behind making time to train and making time with your family? Like, do you have tips for kind of setting priorities? What's involved in creating a schedule? Maybe how someone who's looking at doing this might want to discuss this with their family rather than, because I'm assuming the correct answer isn't just tell them, suck it, I'm going. And, you know, my mother bad cold well. For a few months.
So I think there's a big difference. Are we talking like tackling a half iron or Ironman or just tackling triathlon in general? Because I think there's kind of a dividing line, I think, between the distances. So which ones are we talking about? Like the shorter distance or the longer?
Well, why don't we talk about the longer and then maybe we can kind of follow that up with discussing how that's different when you're looking at something shorter. But I think maybe that'll be self-evident.
So I have this thing that I have trademarked, not officially, but I call it trademark, called the sucky rotation schedule. And the way I put everything on a list, and at any given moment, something has to fall below this line. This imaginary line is like 3 from the bottom on my list. So at all times, there's something that's falling under that line. And it can be the laundry. It can be grocery shopping. It can't be major things like taking your kids to school and going to work. But the minor things in life, I find that's how you juggle. So from just a logistical standpoint, if you're looking to read that post, it's called the sucky rotation schedule. But that is one of my foundations, because if you're going to make time for all the things and you're going to add one more, you have to be willing to allow other things to be below par. Sometimes you have to let the laundry go. You have to let your hair coloring go. Maybe you don't have 3 hours to go get your hair done, that kind of thing. And so that's from a personal standpoint. I found that's really manageable if I just let some things go all the time and then you rotate them. So that's one of the things, tips and tricks I use. But as far as managing family in a household and a spouse and kids, if you have them, it is all about recognizing that you need to communicate and that you need to say thank you and that you need to say, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think setting reasonable expectations is major. And the way that I did it with my husband early on, and he also started triathlon around the same time I did. So we were juggling two new triathletes with two young kids, which was crazy, but we set up a calendar. And it was, these are the days I will train. These are the days I will train long. Like in the case of Ironman, you know, Saturday or Sunday, you got to get that long ride, long run in. And I think there's a misconception, excuse me, that you have to train long Saturday and long Sunday doing these longer distance races. But I found from a family standpoint, if you can do a long run during the week, and you may have to get up at 4 a.m. to do it, and it may have to be on the treadmill, but this is where the compromise comes in. You know, if you can do your long run on Friday and do your long bike on Saturday and then have your recovery day be a weekend day or a day with the family, that will go a million miles towards your long distance training. And trust me on this, I've tried it all. and then just setting out the reasonable expectations. And here's the thing too, you know, if Wednesday is your day to go bike, and that's when your spouse or significant other is going to watch the kids, and you sleep in or miss that bike, then your opportunity's lost. Like, that's kind of the bargain you make. You know, you gotta stick to your end of the bargain as well. And, you know, when you get to the finish of one of these races, it really does take a village. Even if you feel like you have a significant other that's not particularly helpful, there's something that they did to help you. There's, you know, some slack that got picked up, because when you're training for long distance, you do fall down in some ways. You know, you manage to be late or show up with wet hair. It's just kind of a hazard. But I think keeping the communication open, remembering to thank the people in your life, and then remembering to say you're sorry when you're crabby, or, you know, for waking them up at a ridiculous time, not intentionally, but, you know, you got to get up early sometimes. And I think those are the real keys. And also realizing that after this race is over, that you're going to have people on the other side, you know, and to not focus solely on these races. They're important, but the relationships and the family is very important too. You don't want to allow that. I think it's a fine line for women because we want to pursue these goals. We recognize the priorities that are our family. So we have to juggle that, but to do it, you have to not let your family also be an excuse for you. And that's a really interesting concept, but
yeah,
it's really easy to say, well, my kid was sick today, so I didn't run. Well, you could probably still run. You just have to juggle. So it's interesting. It's interesting juggling it all for sure. But those are my main tips, I guess.
Well, speaking to that, because you were just talking about, you know, the pressure it is on the family, you know, take on training and all the things you do, because it's also, it's expensive, it's time consuming, all that stuff. But you said training and participating in marathons has actually helped you become a better wife, mother, and employee. So why do you think that is?
Because I have a sense of self, because I have time that I have carved out for myself. I mean, it is so easy to wake up in the morning and go, 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 go for everyone else, for your job, and then look at the clock. It's 9 o'clock in the evening and you've done nothing for you. And I find that by tackling triathlon and taking on these crazy sports, I carve out the time for myself first thing. I do it in the morning and then I go about my day, and then it's 9 o'clock at night and I've done something for myself and I've taken care of everyone else too. And it is a push and pull and it is hard, but I am healthier. I am happier. My kids, because they see me on the bike trainer or they see me, you know, running these races, they also don't think anything of being healthy. They think it's like what people do, that it's totally normal to wake up at an obscene hour and go to races in the dark. That's what they always say. Are we going to a race, Mom? And I say, yes. And they're like, is it in the dark? Because a lot of these races are like 4 a.m. And they love to go to races in the dark. And you would think most kids would say, oh my gosh. But they're like, oh, is it a race in the dark? And then my son is old enough and he's like, is it a race where we start in the dark and finish in the dark?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I'm like, baby, one day mommy's going to finish in the daylight, one day. But, you know, they embrace it and they run and do all these things, which kids should do. But as you know, in our current culture, it's a challenge to have active kids. But when they have active parents, any time that I may be away from them for an hour and a half or 2 hours on a weekend is totally made up by the example that I'm able to set and that my husband's able to set for them. So I think it's the collective. It's hard to always be a cheerful person and do Ironman, which is one reason I'm not doing it this particular year, but it totally is worth it. It just makes you a happier and healthier person for sure.
I love that. I think that there's a big message of self-love in there and how that self-love translates to setting the right example for your family, which is something that we promote that idea a lot in general. Mm-hmm. And on your site, you really you talk a lot about putting a big focus on showing yourself kindness all along your journey, no matter where you are.
Right.
And I think that you touched on a few ways that you put that in practice, both as a mom and as a triathlete. But, you know, are there any things that you do like on a daily basis to just remind yourself to show yourself that kindness?
Yes, one of the big things is just having a mantra or a word that I kind of repeat in my head throughout the day. And it sounds so cheesy, but, you know, we are our thoughts. We are what we say in our head. We're what we say to ourselves in the mirror. We are what we say when we wake up in the morning. And so I will just have something that I would say to a good friend. And that's the thing. If we would say the things that we would say to our friends, to ourselves, we would be much kinder to ourselves. And so I try and say things like, you're doing great today. Or,
yeah,
you know, way to rock those pants, you know, and it's cheesy stuff. But, you know, if you practice self-kindness, and I, you know, in the beginning, if you're not used to practicing mantras or self-kindness toward yourself, it helps to just tape it to the mirror in the bathroom or at your computer. I often put it up on my computer because that's where I spend most of my day. But just an intention or something kind you want to say to yourself, because after a while, our body follows what our mind says. And if you want to be better and you want to feel better, then you have to train your mind to get to that place and to believe it. And it's a really simple action to go a long way. And then, you know, showing yourself grace and not beating yourself up for whatever it is that has happened, for the regrets you have, for the cookies you ate. Just move on from it and realize that every day and every choice is an opportunity to do something different, to change the course of your life, to change your trajectory, to change your nutrition, whatever. The next choice you make can change everything. And so when you're practicing compassion towards yourself, if you tie all that in together, say, well, it's not a big deal that I ate what I just ate. I'm just going to move forward and feed my body something healthy next meal kind of stuff, instead of saying, oh, why did I do that? I'm so useless, worthless, blah, blah, blah. That is one thing that has really resonated with me this year, and I made a lot of progress because I've got one of the meanest girls living in my head.
Oh, gosh.
It's mean, you know, so kind of quieting her with positive thoughts. She's a little quieter that way.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That is great. I often say that, like, my friend and I were actually talking about this the other day, and it's like, if I talk to my friends the way I talk to myself sometimes, I wouldn't have friends. Like, I get so mad at myself, or I get disappointed in myself. So that's a really good thing to remember. So I want to talk to you, going back to the 90s, the magical 90s, you were into Olympic weightlifting, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Tell me about that, because I'm an instructor, I'm a group fitness trainer, and I'm actually not that great with weightlifting, and I would love to learn more about it. Like, what got you into it, and what was it like to do that in the 90s?
So I started Olympic weightlifting in eighth grade when I played basketball, and my basketball coach would always grab us by, like, the meat of our arm and, like, move us around the court, like, to show us how to set up plays. And he would grab me and pull me, and I wouldn't move because I was like a Mack truck. And so he told my dad, he said, you really need to get this girl into weightlifting. And so my dad took me to this gym. We were in Savannah, Georgia, which is the home of Team Savannah, which is one of the original Olympic weightlifting, like, meccas. And so I started lifting in eighth grade and gave up all the other sports I was playing. Essentially what Olympic weightlifting is, if you watch kind of the CrossFit games, they have some of the lifts. So it's two lifts and it's a competition as far as you have three lifts in each division and then you get a total. But it's, you know, it's a lot of strength training as far as squats and pulls and that kind of stuff. So CrossFit, it includes those lifts, but CrossFit is a little bit, you know, it's kind of a new development, but it is very much rooted in Olympic weightlifting. So that was a great sport to learn some mental toughness and to get strong, but it did not cross over into endurance. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Not helpful at all.
Other than I'm sure there's some mental toughness aspect that maybe. Or maybe not, because it's so short and sprinty.
Well, no, you mean in weightlifting?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely mental toughness because you're looking at a bar that doesn't want to be picked up, you know. And so you have to get your mind in the right place and say, okay, I'm going to pick this up now. This is really heavy. And you live and die by what's between your ears and weightlifting, just like any other sport. But you've got to go out to that bar in a competition and know in your heart and soul that you're going to lift it off the ground. And if you don't believe that, it's not moving. I mean, it might move to your knees, but it's a very, mental toughness is a very, very big component of that sport. And I think that's why I only got so high in the sport. I was perfectly strong, but I was, you know, I was young. I was 17, 18 when I was weightlifting, and it just didn't have the mental fortitude I think I have now, but it was a fun sport.
Super cool. Now, one of the questions that we have gotten a few times, and I've addressed on our site, is people who are new to triathlon and wondering what to wear. And I know that question becomes even more involved when you're talking about a woman who maybe needs more support than your average woman in the bust, or, you know, wears a certain size and, you know, isn't finding what she would ideally like to wear on the rack. And I think it's exceptionally cool that your Tri-Fi line caters to sizes. I think it was from extra small to 4X.
4XL. And they're true to size. It's a true 4XL, not a triathlon 4XL.
That's good to know, because that is not always the case.
Right.
So I mean, obviously, I think that it would be wise for anyone to check all of that out. And you can find that on her website. Don't worry, we will have it all in the show notes for you guys. But I wonder what other advice you might have for someone who's maybe just dipping their toe into triathlon and isn't quite ready to invest in a tri kit, because that can be a little bit more pricey than someone who's doing one race and maybe never wants to do it again. Do you have specific advice for, especially for maybe women who aren't going to walk into a store and find something, you know, like in Target on the rack right there? What would you say?
I think, actually, I have a blog post, and I'll send it over to you so you can put it in the show notes that kind of covers this in more depth. But I think one of the things to remember is in a triathlon, you want to wear one thing the entire race. And that sounds simple, but it's complicated. But for example, if you're going to do the swim, you can wear a swimsuit. And then when you get out of the swim, you can put on bike shorts. And then when you go to run, you can throw on a t-shirt. But all of that, you're putting on clothes. You're not taking anything off.
Yeah. You don't want to take off the wet stuff.
Right. You don't want to take off the wet stuff. So that's kind of, I think, the blueprint is with the understanding that you're going to be wearing one outfit. And yes, you get on your bicycle wet. You don't towel off. You
nope.
just get on and ride into the sunset totally soaking wet. So you can, you know, we've come a long way since 2010 when I started, with just the availability of wicking material that you can get
yes.
from Target. You know, you can go get a wicking sports bra, some wicking shorts, and wear, you know, a snug-ish tank. And it doesn't have to be super tight, but you don't want it to be super loose either, because then you're like a sailboat on
yeah.
your bike. So what I recommend is find something that you're comfortable in, that's sort of form-fitting, and that you can keep on the entire race. And a wicking tank and shorts will be as good as but it will be decent enough for your first few races to wear in the swim, wear on the bike, and then wear in the run.
So your hometown is Savannah.
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite places to visit ever, ever, ever. I love it there. My question for you, I'm going to go back to food. Where are your favorite places to eat in Savannah? Because I'm going to be going there this spring. So advise me.
I have not spent like enough great time down there in so long. But the funniest thing is if you go, are you going to be going to the beach at all?
No.
Down at Tybee? Okay. Cause there's a really great restaurant down there that's like in the strip mall and has like the shoddy sign, but it's like the best
food.
It's called Sunday Cafe, I think. And it's the name doesn't even go. It's like a fine dining restaurant, but that's on Tybee. And I mean, I'm trying to think. There's always the Pirate's House and the Chart House, if it's still there. And, if you like pubs, the Kevin Berry's Pub down on River Street is fantastic. And then, of course, Paula Deen's restaurant originally was fantastic. I don't know how it has been since they've really corporatized it and made it, you know, but when it was a hole in the wall and there was a line out the door, it was really something special. So I just haven't been down there for fun in so long. And I don't mean to say that because my parents still live there and when we go, we have fun, but I don't go down there to, you know, hang out and like enjoy the culture, which is kind of sad. So maybe you'll have better recommendations for me.
I'll shoot you a message when I get back. I'll let you know what
awesome.
I saw. But
yes.
I always go to the Pink House and get some fried
yeah.
green tomatoes, which is just delish.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff on Broughton Street now. I did notice Broughton Street used to be like Nothingville, and there's a lot of really nice stuff down there. You can, in City Market, when you just walk down there, you can find stuff for sure.
Cool.
All right. Well, Meredith, this has been super cool. And I mean, I think I could talk shop with you for a really long time, but I know, you have things to do. You've got kids coming home. So I just want to ask you the last question that we ask everybody on our podcast, which is, what was the last song you listened to before you joined us for this interview?
Oh, that's funny. Okay. So, I'm a big Tony Robbins fan. And one of the things that he talks about is how like to get yourself into a mental state, like when you want to be productive and kind of work. And I was writing before I talked to you, I was writing an article. And so I play the same song over and over and over and over on repeat when I'm working. And it's Ben Howard. He's a really awesome artist, and it's called I Forget Where We Were, and it's nothing fancy, but it's just like my mental state song which it just makes me productive, and I listen to it on repeat, so it's kind of lame. But
no, it's a great answer. No, we're big fans of his. We're trying to get him on the show, but he's tough. I've been trying.
If you get him tonight, please come on too. Please.
Yeah, I'll put you on. Totally. We'll sneak you in.
I would love to just say, hi, Tony, I love you.
I love him. I've been listening. I used to, like, my friend's husband had CDs of his, and he burned them onto cassette for me. And I would, and I would listen to them, and they were really helpful. So, yeah, that's been my goal, is to try to get him on the show this year. They said no, but I'm going to keep trying. Well, Meredith, thank you so much for being on the show today. You're a great guest. We have to have you back on one day.
Yeah, anytime.
Love this show? Tell us why in a 5-star review on iTunes, and we'll read it on the air. Also, make sure you are a subscriber. If you want to reach out to say hi or have a question about a recent episode, yay, well, feel free to email us at podcast@fitbottomgirls.com. And if this podcast jives perfectly with your brand, consider sponsoring the show. Get more info by emailing advertising@fitbottomgirls.com. Find all kinds of Fit Bottom goodness online and on social media at Fit Bottom Girls, Fit Bottom Mamas, Fit Bottom Eats, and Fit Bottom Zen. And if books and movies are your thing, check out the other podcast I co-host called Book vs. Movie, which you can find anywhere where you search for podcasts. Thanks for listening.